Now that the NFL draft is here, you need to subscribe to the SB Nation NFL Show. Our team of national and local experts have the NFL draft covered from every angle. Plus, we're bringing in big-name guests and leading minds from around the industry. Subscribe to the SB Nation NFL Show wherever you get your podcasts for the best coverage of the NFL draft and beyond. Batter up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 82 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my co-hosts Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
We are also joined this week by, as he says, an unemployed former New York Daily News columnist and friend of the pod, Bradford William Davis. Hello, Bradford.
Hey, everybody.
So we had Bradford on the show this week because obviously COVID has been a major story that COVID in baseball has been a major story that he's been covering for the past over a year now. And things are different now this year. We have a full 162 game season. But, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, I guess. We still obviously have, we're not out of this pandemic yet, though the vaccination rate is rising every day. So you've been covering, Bradford, you've been covering MLB and COVID for a long time since the beginning of this. What is new in 2021 compared to 2020 regarding protocols and things like that?
The biggest new thing is that they have relaxed protocols for people who are fully vaccinated, or I should say teams that have reached a 85% threshold of vaccination, which is like kind of like the, I guess, the working estimate for like herd immunity, you know, if 85% of the population,
right,
you know, all has had, you know, the vaccination, you know, enough to date vaccination, they are like, you know, not likely to have outbreaks, you know? So that's a big thing, you know, which is not, you know, stuff that's been pretty well tread ground, but, you know, for those who are unaware, that means like things like, you know, the actual things you can and can't do are very strict. In some ways, honestly, probably draconianly strict. But some ways also make sense. Like, for example, you can't, like, you know, play video games in, you know, the locker room like you used to be able to the clubhouse, you know? So you can't play PlayStation with your friends. You can't, like, you know, because it's, like, you know, it's indoors and, you know, transmission can happen if you're around people too long. Can't take a ride share, you know? So, you know, so just a way of, again, avoiding unnecessary contact. You could drive yourself, you can be on the team bus, but you can't, like, you know, you can't do you know, an Uber with someone who may or may not be, you know, protected, you know, in that sense. Like, that's you know, those are things that you know, that are carryovers from last season. But now, you know, if your team has reached that 85% threshold, you know, which again, 85% of what they call tier one employees, people who are, you know, on the field, coaches, players, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like, if those folks have, you know, if enough of them have, you know, have gotten their shots and are 2 weeks out from their last shot, whichever one you know, they received, you know, you can kind of return to normalcy. You can eat inside. You can eat, you know, inside a restaurant rather than, you know, having to be outside or at your hotel or something like that, you know? So, you can even hang out with people who are not, you know, who are not in your party, you know, like in your household. So, you know, that can mean friends, that can mean friends, you know, that could, you know, like, so all, like, you know, things that would certainly appeal to, you know, bored, young, handsome, eligible, athletic, you know, men in their 20s and early 30s, right? Like, the ability to play video games with your bros and go on dates, you know? But as, you know, as we know, not every team, in fact, most teams reportedly have not reached that 85% threshold. One of them being, our Mets.
The New York Mets. Meet the Mets.
Yes. Meet the Mets. But don't greet the Mets.
Greet the Mets
from at least 6 feet, fully masked, yeah, in a well-ventilated area.
Yes. So that's still a problem. And it's been kind of weird watching this team be extremely cagey whenever asked about vaccines.
Yeah, they don't like the question.
No.
It was really obvious at the beginning of the season, the like super vague kind of answers that people would give, including people who sort of seem to be hinting at being pro vaccination, but like didn't seem to feel that they could say that.
Yeah, Pete Alonso in particular said,
that was a weird response.
Said, like, I'm in a vaccine ad, so, like, make of that what you will. But then, like, wouldn't say whether he got the vaccine or not. Which was, like, at first I really thought that it was kind of almost like a league-wide, like, because the players' union had not, like, made it mandatory or come out and said everyone has to get the shot, that the players were sort of following that lead and being, like, very, like, non-committal about it to sort of, I guess, like, protect their guys who, the anonymity of the guys who aren't getting it and, like, not make them subject to backlash or whatever. But first of all, you don't have to do that. And second of all, it's clearly not that, because Max Scherzer was like, I trust the science, I'm gonna get the shot. So, like, the second that he said that, I was like, yeah, you guys, like, he can say that and nothing happened to him. So, maybe you should step up and say it.
Yeah, I'm just, like, imagining, like, you know, I don't know, like Patrick Corbin giving Max Scherzer a swirly or something, for, like, you know, for giving you guys a vaccine.
Yeah, like, I'd like to see Corbin try.
Yeah, right?
He'd miss.
I mean, I just don't, I said this on Twitter a couple days ago, but, or I don't know, maybe it was like a month ago, time is a flat circle, that, like, how do they look at what's going on with the league and all of the teams that are missing lots of games, losing big players? How is this not seen as a baseball issue? That's what just kind of drives me crazy. Like, this is affecting the quality of play. How is that enough of an incentive itself?
Yeah. You know, it's really, really bugged out. Like, you know, like, if for nothing else, like, so that you are in the best position to win, you know? Like, I feel like it was like, hey, you want steroids? Free steroids, I'm going to be like, me.
Right?
You know?
We were,
but, like, you know.
We were making a joke before the game because Brandon Nimmo got a cortisone shot for his hip impingement that he's been dealing with for the past week or so.
Oh my God, if they just slipped a vax in it?
Yeah, we were making a joke to just, like, slip some Pfizer in there. And be like, right. But for real, I mean, like, I'm not advocating for, like, you know, committing, like, malpractice, medical malpractice, but
thank you, doctor.
Yeah. Please don't sue me. But what I'm saying is that, like, these guys seem to, it's a huge double standard. These guys seem to trust the medicine and trust the science when it comes to helping them get better from their injury. So why should this be seen differently when it comes to their health and their performance? Like, Brandon Nimmo clearly trusts, correctly so, that a cortisone shot will help him perform better. And yeah, it will. Why won't they trust that this vaccine is the same thing? It's a thing that's helping them stay healthy, and staying healthy is literally their job.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because there is so much poorly communicated information / disinformation out there about coronavirus and vaccines, specifically. There is not a lot about cortisone shots, you know, or about rotator cuff surgery, you know, but there is about, you know, this health crisis. It has become, I don't like using the word politicized because it's hard to, like, really rip politics about anything, but, like, you know, but, so it's not exactly the right word, but it is certainly, it's, you know, support for the vaccine often falls on political lines. Those, you know, as we know in this country, you know, politics are racialized. And many of the people in baseball, in Major League Baseball, are, you know, white dudes, and, you know, and white dudes tend to be both more conservative and more hesitant to get the vaccine. You know, statistically speaking, you know, as it's obviously brought the nation. That's not everyone. Obviously, Max Scherzer was like, you know, let me get it. You know, Andrew Miller was really hype about it. But a lot of dudes aren't. You know, and I think, you know, and I think if you like look at, you just go on, if you were just like to like follow the wrong people on Instagram, you know, you will see how quickly sort of like disinformation spreads, you know, on COVID stuff, you know, like, there are, you know, there's so many, you know, and that's on everything from like masks, you know, mask wearing and the efficacy of those, to the seriousness of the virus, even though again, 500,000 people died, you know, to the effects of vaccinations on children in general, you know, and that's another thing too. Vaccination hesitancy has long preceded, you know, like coronavirus. And so you know, it's just like all that skepticism has been like kind of lit on fire, you know, over the last,
a lot of the narratives, you know, have been established about like insufficient testing and, you know, rent, like they get into really like, This idea of like fertility comes up a lot.
Yes.
That vaccines would.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not a thing. But it's not coronavirus, it's spreading around. First time that came up. Yeah.
And like, you know, like I have a friend, you know, like one of my super close friends, like, you know, who is not a skeptic of science at all. But like, you know, but he was asking me, he's like, honestly, I'm a little nervous about getting a vaccine. You know, he had an appointment and everything because I heard about fertility issues, you know? And I was, you know, and I was like, man, there's no evidence of that. and so, I showed him an article about that and that was that, right? But like, you know, but again, it shows how even, you know, again, among like, you know, people who are not, I am someone who is like, you know, first of all, I'm just not, well, for a long time anyway, I'm fully vaccinated, but like, you know, but before that, you know, I was just kind of like, you know, locked in my apartment for like a long period of the day. And I was just like, you know, and so I get to like, you know, read a lot of news stories, you know, but I have a filter with which to understand, you know, good news and fake news, as a journalist, right? And also, you know, just someone, you know, who I guess reads well. I don't mean to, you know, to brag, but like, there's all that, you know, so having that kind of, you know, I'm able to read a lot about stuff. I'm able to, you know, follow the news, all the CDC updates, and then professionally, I just have and still am, you know, following, you know, pandemic stuff, especially as it intersects with sports, you know, pretty closely. So it's like, you know, I have like sort of a professional obligation to understand this, and I still at times get confused as to like what I should be doing to protect myself during a pandemic. Like, can I go out? You know, I was definitely afraid of going outside for like months, you know. Even though the science never supported, you know, outdoor transmission being a real thing, you know, being a serious issue. I was, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I wasn't sure about subways. I wasn't sure about, you know, I was renting a car to like go grocery shopping for like, it was like 3 months early in the pandemic. It's very expensive. there's all sorts of things that were just very, very, very strange and very confusing, you know, and I can imagine if you have not, you know, if you're not a news nerd journalist, you know, desperately trying to understand, you know, the pandemic and everything like that, like it could be kind of like, you know, it could be daunting to kind of process everything, you know, and we have to admit, like, you know, our governmental institutions have not been clear often about what is good, you know, public health, you know, like, I mean, throughout the Trump administration, we had like, you know, like our president talking about like UV rays. And whatever,
and pouring bleach into your veins or whatever.
Bleach your veins as a way, you know, like when Georgia opened up barbershops kind of early in the pandemic, after closing them for, you know, briefly, and people were asking like, you know, how should barbers or clients like stay safe, and Deborah Birx, who was like, you know, one of the top people in the previous administration's like, you know, coronavirus response team, was like, yeah, hey, just get creative. Like, what? How? Like, you know, like, really? You know, that was almost a rave. She's like, you know, I'm sure you can get creative. And, you know, so that's like stuff coming off from on top. You know, for a while it was don't wear masks, you know. Then it was wear masks. Today it's wear masks sometimes. You're fully vaccinated. You know, like, I mean, like, it's, there's a lot. It's, you know, there's a lot, you know. The CDC recently changed, you know, the ruling for schools from like, you know, 6 feet of distance to like 3 feet of distance. I don't see any sort of scientific basis for that. It just seems like they want schools back in, you know, in session. And I understand prioritizing schools is like one of the few things that should be like, you know, the last thing to close to say, you know, for the sake of society and our families and all that. But like, you know, but like but I can, again, imagine like you're just, you know, you're someone who is not professionally or personally deeply invested in this information. It could be really, really daunting. So I give that long preface and say, like, I sympathize to a degree with these athletes, right? However, they also have received ample information from the league, to my understanding, from the players' union, both of which want them to all get vaccines. They've had all these training sessions, you know, from what I've heard from sources, you know, they were not pleased that they had to sit in the meeting and hear about vaccines. You know, like, they, you know, there is a level of selfishness in this, you know, and you know,
they can go to another meeting if they don't get vaccinated.
Carlos Carrasco was like, like one of the first guys to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because because he's a cancer survivor. Like, for, you know, for your team, for your buddy, you're down to cover for, like, you know, for whatever idiot, you know, doesn't want to get a vaccine. Apparently it's a sort of act of camaraderie, you know, within the Mets, you know, to just say like, hey, it's a personal decision. Which I guess it is in the technical legal sense, but it also doesn't make you an idiot and a jerk to not do it. But then, you know, but yeah, you're covering for Cookie Carrasco, like, you know, or you're not covering for him, you know, like who, you know, wanted a vaccine to make sure that, you know, that he does not die. And none of y'all are, you know, can bother to robustly support a medical treatment that can help save, you know, your friend's life, ostensibly, you know, or so we assume, right? There are, you know, Tom Seaver died of COVID.
Yep,
like,
literally.
Like the best player in your franchise history died of coronavirus. More people, like in New York, you guys were here, you know, for a lot of it. Like, or not here, but in Florida. But like, you know, but you know so many New Yorkers, so many of your fans died of this illness.
Well, that's what bothers me. Like when they were like saying we honor our healthcare heroes, like you're not. Like your own team isn't getting vaccinated, so you're not honoring the healthcare heroes who just went through hell for a whole year.
Right, right. Like, come on, guys. And of course, it's easier said than done. A bunch of four like-minded people on this podcast, you know, talking about an ideological war, essentially, you know, but just kind of played out with public health science, right? So it's easy for them to persuade that, but they do have the information pertinent and pertinent information about this available to them, you know, at a moment's notice. That, you know, they have that privilege, you know, that many people don't have, you know, of what I would imagine to be very clear information, you know, clear access to any sort of questions they have from a qualified medical professional, you know, on what to do with, you know, whatchamacallit, on how to deal with, you know, how to protect themselves during the virus and any sort of doubt they have about vaccines. That is available to them, and they still, you know, are struggling to do that. And that really, really, really pisses me off. I can't stress that enough of how, with all that said, and my understanding of how this can be confusing and how if you sympathize to a small degree, like that you can't just put that aside, you know, listen to the professionals that have been provided to you who want you to get this so that you can play baseball more and not die. And if you're on the fence, you know, for the sake of, you know, your teammates, your friends, your community back home, like, you know, your community at the ballpark, that you wouldn't just like go out and do, you know, and get this one or two shots. Like, come on, man.
And it's wild to me the cognitive dissonance it takes on their part to say, like, I don't want this shot, but also I want fans back in the stadium. It's like, what do you think is getting fans back in the stadium? The vaccination. That's what's getting fans back in the stadium. Like, this, like, what you want, which I assume that most baseball players do, I mean, some are, like, a little bit more like this than others, but, like, part of what they enjoy about their job and what helps them thrive is, like, you know, the crowd, the atmosphere of the game, and, like, they want that to all go back to normal. And it's like, bro, that's only going to go back to normal if The vaccine gets distributed to everybody and everybody gets the shot. So you think that it's everybody else's responsibility, but not yours? Like, what is wrong with you? And like, their team, right. not only do they have a teammate who is a cancer survivor, they also have multiple teammates who have gotten this virus. Tomas Nieto is very sick. He said so himself.
Right. He missed the season, right? He missed all of 2020.
Yeah, pretty much the whole season. Yeah. Pretty much the whole season he missed because he was so sick. And Conforto got the virus before he came to camp. And I mean, I don't know. He hasn't talked much about it. I don't know, like, anything about any long-term effects, or he hasn't said anything about, like, how it affected his ramp up. But he came late to camp because he had COVID.
I'll tell you,
it's
COVID,
not making him play better.
He came late to camp, and he's sucked.
Yeah, he's been bad.
He's been really bad.
And even he, you know, as a representative of the union, which, again, you know, I guess it's part of, like, in the deep issues here, right, is that, like, a union member, right, a union leader, you know, is not robustly advocating it publicly, you know, for this. I mean,
that's the part that bugs me, that they're not talking about it. That it's like taboo to say vaccinations are a good thing.
Yeah, like it's out of like an outside sense of, I don't know, loyalty to, you know, whatever, you know, I guess over 15% of the roster idiots like don't want to do this, you know? Like, you know, I mean, geez, man, like, you know, the Conforto should be particularly, I think, you know, guilty, you know, ashamed of himself, honestly, you know, for not doing that. I'm okay with saying that. I'm trying not to be like emotional about it because it just angers me so much, given, again, the sheer amount of suffering and loss around the world and in our country. But, you know, and so, like, so
and
I'm,
in
like,
our city,
I'm like, biting my tongue, you know, like in our city, you know,
not to like take, but, like, I mean, not that to minimize like what other places are going through, which is mostly the same thing, but like New York was a hellhole. It was like, a terrifying, I mean, we're just a couple neighborhoods away, and I know you heard all the sirens I heard, and it was rough.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like
they just forgot.
I mean, and you're right next to the hospital, so I'm sure you know you're constantly right, like
equidistant between two hospitals. So that was great.
So there you go. So like, and then you know, I'm not far either for listeners. Like, you know, through two hospitals, so I heard a lot. You know, and then so we've gone through so much pain. You know, like, you know, my grandmother passed away in January out of COVID, but like, you know, but I didn't get to see her when she was dying because, like, you know, like logistics with like the virus and everything, you know, like I didn't, you know, I didn't want to accelerate, you know, her death or get, you know, the other, you know, 60 plus, you know, adults who live with her, you know, hurt either. So like, you know, and it's like, you know, man, Tom Seaver died of COVID.
And also just like the economic effects too of this. Like there's a lot of New Yorkers still suffering, maybe not of the disease, but you know, their jobs were taken away, they were furloughed, they're worried about rent. Like it was an awful, awful thing. And they could just, you know, they're privileged enough to be like, it's a choice.
Yeah, your money got hit, yo. Y'all last 4 months of the season.
Yeah.
Because of the pandemic. Like,
well, the other thing is that, you know, the city has done amazingly with its vaccinations, but it is starting to level off. And part of that is people who are hard to reach for various reasons, but a lot of it is also young dudes who don't really feel particularly vulnerable and don't want to bother. And that is a population that can be reached by peer pressure.
Yeah, and so like, you know, like there are 25-year-old men, you know, who would be like, you know, man, because Jacob DeGrom, you know, got the vaccine, the best player in the world right now, right? Like, I will get the vaccine too, you know? Like, if he can do it, and he's like clearly immortal, he got it, you know, like, you know, I guess it'll be fine if I get that, you know, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, whatever the hell, you know?
Support for this episode comes from Locker Room. the app that's changing the way we talk sports. Locker Room is a sports fan's dream come true. It's a live audio platform that lets you connect with other fans, experts, and even the athletes themselves. Locker Room makes it easy to start your own conversations. Talk about the latest rumors, takes, news, and teams you care about most. Join massive watch parties for all of your friends to react together in real time as you celebrate a buzzer beater or suffer the agony of a crucial bricked free throw. And if you've got a bunch of supremely spicy takes you'd like to fire off, you're in luck. You can even record the conversations if you want and release them as a podcast. So it's time to start thinking about catchy titles. It's all totally free and available at the iOS App Store right now. So go download it today. Locker Room. Changing the way we talk sports.
But, you know, but I have to say, you know, with all that tonight, I've ranted on the players so much, but like, I guess I do want to balance my hedges. Like, again, there's been a lot of poor information about this stuff, you know, and though these people, you know, there should be some personal responsibility here. You know, I think that, and the league has provided them good information, you know, today, you know, on this stuff. But like, you know, but the league is, I would still say that the information even disseminated from Major League Baseball on coronavirus has not always been strong either, which I think kind of adds to the issues here. Think about these 2020 protocols, right? You know, think about like them hand sanitizing baseballs. The weird sort of like meeting spaces they had outdoors where like everyone would like stand 6 feet away from each other, you know, while having a meeting in the outfield. Think about, think about the black rope that everyone held on opening night that was like, you know, 6 feet distance, whatever, because they couldn't touch or something, you know, so that players wouldn't be touching or shaking hands, you know, like think about, you know, banning sunflower seeds or spinning or whatever the hell it was, you know, like, I mean, all sorts of like stuff that like, you know, there wasn't a lot of evidence even back then, you know, that it was, you know, serious, you know, a serious way of like, you know, catching COVID. But what was, you know, but so they were really strict on that stuff. But what they were not strict about were like, you know, playing baseball.
Yeah.
and, you know, or not canceling games when multiple people tested positive, which is what happened to the Marlins and the Cardinals. You know, that was ultimately a league decision, you know, like what a lot of the reporting, I think it was very, you know, bad framing from a lot of reporters on this was that like the players decided they wanted to play, you know, which like, yeah, they did. But like, you know, the league has the final say on that, you know, Major League Baseball. They can go in and be like, no, we're not playing this game. Well, that was with the Marlins, you know, like, because apparently they all decided to play. And if the players in the league disagree on whether to play or not, then there's like a joint body, like, you know, I forget the name of it right now, but something like the COVID-19, body group that like, you know, makes the final verdict on this. But the point, you know, but like, you know, and, but it's like, again, a league and NPA oriented like thing that they create together. So like, that was in the protocols that everyone agreed to. They did not lay the hammer down when it was very obvious that an outbreak was happening, you know, with the Marlins or with the Cardinals. And then even today, even now in 2021, you know, like we had the situation with the Phillies, where they, you know, where multiple people were out, you know, at the same time, and the league let them play a game, but the league, you know, was not clear at all as to like the criteria, you know, as to why this was not an outbreak and other situations were. So I can imagine as a player being very frustrated with that, you know, and so like the league does deserve, I think Major League Baseball does share some responsibility in not majoring in the minors of COVID, but like when it comes down to like, you know, actual things like the Marlins or the Cardinals or Justin Turner in the World Series and all of the people, you know, who allowed him to like just kind of like be there and like, you know, which led to an outbreak in the Dodgers that Major League Baseball didn't disclose, but like the Los Angeles County public health department like did, you know, all, you know, that sows discord, that sows confusion, you know, which leads to a situation where they can't convince anyone, you know, to go get a shot.
Well, so
let's not blame individuals. I want to be clear about like the institution that also creates a sort of climate.
Well, they're not enforcing any of their rules either. Like they were supposed to be wearing masks in the dugout. That's like some are, some aren't. Like they're not really enforcing those protocols they have now. So why would a player follow them if there's not going to be any consequence for it?
Yeah. And I mean, going back to, I think Bradford, you made a really good point about like, how is someone without the, you know, who isn't, you know, super invested in this or doesn't have, you know, the proper like training, because, you know, if you're a person who has had extensive like training in journalism or English or, you know, science, it's just like various things that teach you to read and think critically. It's like very hard to, you know, get the right message. And the message does keep changing all the time. And but my point that I made on Twitter recently is that like people, humans, as like just as human beings, we are cognitively like naturally uncomfortable with uncertainty, and so when the message keeps changing, we don't know what to do with that. But the reality is that's how science working, how it's supposed to, and the constant like changing of, and I'm not saying that our government handled this well at all. I'm not saying that. But the, like, you know, when Fauci says one thing and then he says another thing, it's often just science working how it's supposed to. We didn't know anything about this coronavirus. That's why it was the novel coronavirus. And so when we get new information, we have to then change how, you know, we react to it. Once we get new information, we then change our conclusions. That's literally what science is. That is the scientific method. Get new information, change your conclusion. So I think that people just don't really like get that, and that's totally understandable. And the league is also not helping with the way it is constantly changing things, but that's also naturally part of the process. And I think like hammering that home, that a changing message doesn't mean you shouldn't trust it, is something that's important too.
I'd also say, and I mean, you know, this is the league that still uses bunts, so
yeah, right. You know.
Maybe we're hoping for too much change too fast.
And I mean, listen, it is, you're right, Allison, that it is part of the process. But I would say, I would also say that Major League Baseball chose to emphasize stuff that there was not strong evidence for when they started the season. You know, like, and, you know, while minimizing stuff that there was extremely strong evidence for, and they had their team of experts, you know, advising them. So it's not like they did not have the, you know, they did not have the information privy to make an informed decision on this. You know, they just chose to play that Marlins game,
right?
Like, you know, like you know, that was, you know, that's on them. But they made a big show, and they had all their, you know, all the people they leaked, you know, information to, you know, all the top scoop getters, you know, got to talk about how like, oh, it's so barrel, it's so, this protocol is so big, they hand sanitized the baseballs, you know. Like, you know, you can't even share a rag anymore. But like, oh, hey, you know, what, is there like a clear criteria for when a game should get canceled? No.
No.
Like, you know, like, so they were happy to, you know, manufacture a thoroughness that was not present, you know, and was not especially informed either, you know? Like, you know, which doesn't make them unique of, you know, because most businesses do that. Like, you know, again, you know, like things like temperature checks, like we, like for basically forever, like since like day one, new temperature checks aren't doing crap. So like, you know, to,
but it looks like something.
You know, but it looks like you're trying your best when you have a little forehead check and everything like that, you know, but like, and that was, you know, but that's what, you know, but and so that's not, you know, that's true of, you know, the mall and the Apple store as well, you know, and in your favorite restaurant. But like, you know, but Major League Baseball, again, you know, was happily, you know, happy to, again, to give off the appearance of caring about it when, you know, when with the few super critical things that they, you know, that were in their control that they, you know, they did not, you know, emphasize. And a lot of people got sick of that.
Yeah,
they did the easy stuff, but like the hard stuff, they couldn't make the hard decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other like kind of aspect of this is not just, you know, the protocols that the players and the staff are subject to, but it's interesting seeing how in 2021, each ballpark has different rules about capacity and whether proof of vaccination or a negative test is required to attend a ball game. And it seems to have been left up to, you know, local health departments for the most part. And as you know, and you have previously reported on, like, Major League Baseball and local health departments have not always been communicating with each other on this. So what are your thoughts about that? And, you know, various stadiums having differing capacities and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It's like, I mean, I think New York, of all things considered, is doing it pretty well, you know, by just kind of like, you know, requiring either a negative test, a recent negative test, or proof of vaccination. You know, that's a great way of, severely minimizing the risk, you know, of COVID spread. I just belched. Should I start that over? Okay. So, yes, you know, I think that Major League Baseball, I think that these teams had, you know, some teams have done it well, like New York, for example, like, or not teams, I should say cities, you know, like near, like the Mets and Yankees, like, you know, you have to like show a negative COVID test, to get in the ballpark, or, if you're a media or fan, you know, a media fan, or a proof of vaccination card 2 weeks out. I think that is like, you know, that's a good way of reducing risk. You know, fortunately baseball is an outdoor sport, so there is not a whole lot of opportunity for transmission among fans, because of the outdoors nature of it. However, you know, that doesn't mean that it's totally foolproof either. And there are, sort of situations, you know, where, I think, you know, COVID could clearly spread. One that sticks out, is over in Texas with what the Rangers did for opening day. You know, I mean, I don't think there was, I mean, again, it's still, I mean, not outdoor, but like, you know, but the roof was open, you know, and their new dome monstrosities, you know, ugly stadium in the world, but, you know, is what it is, airport hangar. But like, they, you know, they had a lot, you know, like they had the roof open and all that, but like, because of, the amount of people that were there and, I should also say, for those who are not listening, I actually went to Texas to go check it out. I was fully vaccinated. I was like, let me go and and take some notes here, because I feel like this could be worth the story one day. So I went out to Texas. I went out to Arlington to witness that, you know, the Rangers lose to the Blue Jays, as they lose, you know, many of the games because they're not good. But this whole crowd, you know. And it's like, you know, again, I doubt the super spreader, but like, but there are situations that like are probably not helpful. Like one of them being the fact that they don't have cash transactions there, because they're getting, they're stuck in, you know, March of 2020 mode, where they think that touching the wrong thing will get you sick. Or we say they want to act like they care about that, you know, like that's the real thing and that they're preventing anyway, it's just there rather than actually, you know, being the issue. And so, like, so everything is cashless. I mean, there's no concession guy, but no, like, you know, hot dog or peanut guys, you know, walking, you know, through the aisles. And that's true at Citi Field too, in the Yankee Stadium. But what it creates is, it's like this, like, crazy logjam for like food and Globe Life. So you have like just kind of like people ass to elbows, like waiting for their hot dogs and the nachos or, you know, or whatever, the beer, like, you know, all doing cashless transactions, I guess, to avoid close contact, you know? But like, you know, 40,000 people, like, you know, and the lines are crazy long. I've never seen lines as long ever for food, you know? And I've been to like playoff games, you know,
at
like
even the Citi Field Shake Shack.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's like longer. Well, imagine if like everything was like a little bit longer than a bad Citi Field Shake Shack line.
Oh, God.
That's what like every single stand was. And, you know, but more crowded.
Oh, God.
If you can believe it. You know, well, you know, more huddled up, you know, little less airflow. And that's kind of, you know, and it's like, again, it's probably not going to be the end of the world, but like, it's just like, why would you play with fire in this? You know, I mean, the answer is dangle money, but, you know, but they chose to do that. And that's unfortunate to me because, you know, they could be getting with the program and setting a good example for their citizens on how to behave, even, you know, even as we see encouraging results from, I guess, enough people getting COVID / vaccines / warmer weather, because people outdoors more, whatever reason for defying rates, you know. But still, you know, still very much being in a pandemic, they could have, you know, set an example, but they chose not to. And, you know, that's sad, but that is clearly America.
Yep.
In 2020 and 2021. So, you know, I can't get too down on one place being, when everywhere is kind of like to some degree.
Yeah. One of the more interesting like plans I saw was in San Diego, they're considering having vaccinated sections with 67% capacity and then 33% capacity for all other sections, which like when you read that at first, you're kind of like, oh, okay. Like, I guess that kind of makes intuitive sense. But then you think about it harder and you're kind of like, what happens when you go get food and what happens? Like, and now I feel like you're kind of just cramming all the unvaccinated people together, and that kind of seems like it's counterintuitive, because the whole point of herd immunity is to have the vaccinated people like interspersed throughout, so that like you're protecting unvaccinated people. And so it's kind of just like that was kind of weird pandemic theater to me, to have that, because I was kind of
there are a few stadiums trying to pilot that, right? I want to say Dodger Stadium as well is messing around with something like that. You know, I could be mistaken about that, but like, you know, but yeah, they're, you know, it's not, San Diego's not the only place trying that out. And yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, the point of herd immunity is to get right, is that they have enough people who, you know, who have immunity or protection, you know, and disperse so that COVID doesn't get a chance to like hop up from person to person to person to person to person. Right. But at least, you know, but given that I guess I could say, though, even so, that the fact that the crowds are like 30% or 33% or whatever, like, you know, that means more distancing and, you know, and for the unvaccinated sections, I'm being clear, to be clear, you know,
I would like to be in a vaccinated section, but also only have to sit like 6 feet away from everybody. Can I have a special like extra vaccinated section where I get 9 feet? Like, that's what I'm looking for.
And my own concessions. Could they bring purses in? Could they bring bags in?
No, that's still not a thing, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, again, like that's
because we carry COVID in our purses to the stadium all the time.
Yep.
And that's I'm so glad you brought that up, Linda, because that's like the issue. And again, that trickles down to people not being sure if they should get a vaccine or not. Because it's like, we do all this stupid stuff that doesn't matter, mm-hmm. and we're so strict on it, and there are clear financial incentives, you know, and moral hazards to enforcing you to not be able to bring, you know, like a bottle of water or your sandwich, essentially, you know, to a game, so that you pay cashless for, you know, whatever $14 nachos and $12 beer. You know, like all sorts of, you know, all these things that don't matter, that don't actually stop COVID spread, that we are incredibly strict on. But again, like the stuff that actually matters, you know, we are as cavalier as can be about. And that is, you know, and that create, you know, like we have to account for that when we ask why aren't the Mets or any team, you know, getting their shots? It's because we've been pumped a load of crap, including by their employers.
Yep. And like, there comes a point where you have to, like, if people don't feel like their lives are going to change in any conceivable way by getting the shot, they're not going to do it. So we have to, like, emphasize to them that this is what's needed for you to be able to do stuff again. And so by continuing to be like, you can't bring a bag into the ballpark for no reason. And so if you're like a woman or a person with a kid or like a person with a disability, then you're just screwed, basically, I guess. Like, I don't know. I made a tweet about how I was gonna like wear my maxi pads around my neck on a necklace, like pretzels at a beer festival if I go to the ballpark, because apparently I can't bring them in my purse. So
that's is Citi Field one of the ones doing the no bag policy?
I don't think
I hadn't. I feel like I would have heard and been memorably angry.
Yes.
Because I'm quite angry about any place doing it. There's a million reasons that it is a terrible idea, and a lot of them have to do with equity, for example. But I don't think I remember being especially angry about the Mets doing it.
They may I've been very Mets angry lately.
Yes, they still have their backpack
policy. They still have the backpack policy. I know the Nats had this policy of like no bags. And like, and I mean, like Bradford said, it's there's financial incentive to this too, right? Because then they just like, they're like, oh, you can't bring your bag in. Oh, but here's a locker you can rent for money. And it's just like, ugh, of course.
Or no outside food, which, you know, again, you're not, you know, you bringing your PB&J is not going to get anyone sick. Like, that's not, you know, that is emphatically not the problem. But it does mean that at from, you know, 1 to 4 or 7 to 10, you know, during your mealtime, you're hungry and you have to, you know, go and spend $30 to feed yourself.
Yep.
$120 for a family of four.
Yep.
Right.
Before we move on to walk-off wins, I just wanted to get, Bradford, I just wanted to get your, we'll just close with some quick baseball takes. I wanted to get your take on, because I know that you've been following both the Yankees and the Mets closely, and so I know that the Yankees fan base in particular has been I guess, in Panic City.
They're going crazy.
So,
Yankee fans listening. Chill out. April.
They would never survive as Mets fans.
I was gonna say, God, it's so funny. It's so funny to watch it go down as a Mets fan. Not just because I know I'm terrible. Not just because like I enjoy the suffering, although, you know, it's kind of funny. But it's more just like, as a person who has rooted for a team that has sucked for most of my life, like your team sucks for 1 month and you don't know how to act.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like those experiments where you take chimps and like put them in a room with all kinds of like regular human objects, and they're going up, they're like, what's this? I don't know. Angry. And they like bang it against. That's kind of the vibe that Yankee fans have just been dropped off in this mysterious room of confusing loss, and they just have no idea how to handle it. And I kind of am very excited to see how they figure it out, but it will certainly not last long.
But just like, so I know that Bradford, you are taking up the mantle of the Yankees are not that bad, guys, please chill. And I agree with you. So like, what do you think, like, why do you think the Yankees are not that bad, and how do you think they're going to survive this? Is it like they always do, just by like, you know, hitting home runs until they're cured? Or what are like the bright spots that Yankees fans should be excited about the team?
Yeah, I think the things to be encouraged about with the Yankees are that, you know, I haven't watched the game. I mean, you know, I've been on this podcast. Okay, good. So Corey Kluber pitched well today. I just pulled up, you know, his, you know, the box score. But like, you know, but Kluber and Taillon have pitched pretty well. Like, you know, Corey Kluber and Damon Taillon, you know, being the two big additions to their rotation, but ones that came with a lot of risk, given that basically neither of them have pitched in the last 2 years. And, you know, they were named to different degrees. Obviously, Corey Kluber was one of the best pitchers of the last decade. And Taillon have a lot of, like, you know, it's a live arm, a lot of talent, but they've been injured a lot.
Like signing former Cy Young winner Corey Kluber, like, that's something the Mets would do. It's like a Freaky Friday situation.
So they're like, there's kind of like two streams of thought on this that I think you gotta have to kind of hold together, right? One is that the Yankees, as most teams, essentially all teams, honestly, could spend more. They could compete more for good players and trades and free agency, you know, everyone, including the Mets, including, you know, even the Dodgers, you know, like could spend more. You know, there's so much money in the sport, you know, flowing through it, even in even after a down year, the last 20 years of success, you know, like, you know, should have given you some reserves to not cry poor all offseason, right? And so because of that, you don't need to necessarily be super smart and try and find the right guy, even if it's a little risky, and be first on him or whatever, so that you so that your accounting looks better, and you know, and that you could say, hey, we're our scouting and R&D department, and you know, and pitch design department and GM, we're all really smart, you know, and that's what the Yankees try to do, and are doing, you know, currently, and you know, whether payoffs is yet to be seen, but like, you don't have to do that. You can just go trade for Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
Like, you know, clearly the price is right on him because the Cubs are giving away for free, you know? You can go do that. You know, you can go after, you know, Lance Lynn or you know, whoever who's been dominating for the White Sox, you know? Like, you can, you can be in on Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco. Like, you know, who clearly did not cost that much. You know, Ahmed Rosario has not, you know, broken out, and, you know, in Cleveland yet. Like, you know, like, I mean, you know, they could, you know, the Yankees absolutely could have been in on that, you know, rather, you know, I would rather have Francisco Lindor the next 6 years than DJ LeMahieu, even though DJ LeMahieu is a very good player, you know? But like, you know, and he's a better fit for what the Yankees need, given, you know, that they have been very right-handed and Gleyber Torres is not a good defensive shortstop, you know, or hasn't been throughout his young career. So like, they could have been in on that, right? However, it does not mean that the players themselves are bad either. And that's what I would say. Like, if you watch particularly again, Corey Kluber and Jameson Taillon, they look like they still know how to pitch. Kluber's had issues with his command, you know, early, but you know, he always starts off slow. Even when he was like in his prime and young, he's been a kind of slow starter in April. And then he like takes off and he hasn't pitched in 2 years, but his stuff is still breaking. It's still moving. He, you know, like, you know, there's still plenty of pitching ninja gifts to be extracted from, you know, his stuff, like, you know, his actual, you know, play. And James Hayan's stuff is looking awesome. Like, you know, you know, he hasn't lost any bite on anything, you know. Hoover maybe lost a little bit from age, but like, I mean, Tyon's not. The problem is that they're getting like gassed and they're, you know, figuring out command issues, which again, could be easily attributed to not playing for the last 2 years. So like these guys, you know, these guys will be fine, and that's on the pitching side. And then, offensively, you know, again, like, you really think like none of these guys are going to slug over 350 the rest of the year, playing in Yankee Stadium? Like, I know we're in a pitcher's sort of like, you know, renaissance, because everyone, you know, has, you know, pine tar and, you know, Rapsodos like to make the perfect slider. But like, you know, but the Yankees have still been able to launch stuff the last few years. They didn't lose that. You know, Giancarlo Stanton is still Giancarlo Stanton. Everything he hits is like 120 miles an hour, even the ground ball, no, you know, like,
yes.
same with many of their key veteran bats, you know, like they're still taking, you know, they're still walking a lot. They're still like taking good at bats. They've just been struggling on crushing those kind of mistake pitches. Which is more of evidence of a slump than of like a actual the degradation in skill when you know when you're just like you know not able to hit the 93 mile an hour fastball right over the plate, you know, or messing up on it, making the wrong choice. That's like, you know, and that's already happening right now. Like tonight, you know, Judge, Kyle Gashioka, and Stan all hit home runs tonight. You know, like that's right now. You know, that's live and direct. You know, you saw them beat Shane Bieber on 2 home runs. You know, like Shane Bieber is, you know, arguably, you know, the best pitcher in America. You know, I won't say in baseball because I know where I am right now.
Yeah.
But like, you know, but he's in the conversation for like one of those like top 5 arms in all of baseball, right? And they beat him because they hit home runs. They hit 2 home runs, and then Cleveland only scored 1 run. So like they, you know, the Yankees are fine. Like, I would not worry about them. You know, I think they have some defensive issues that, you know, I haven't seen them hustle as much as they should, frankly, on defense. I'm not talking about Gleyber Torres not running out that, you know, that grounder. I think that was not actually that big a deal, given that like Gio Urshela got hurt like an inning before running out of grounder. I can, you know, it was cold, it was like 40 degrees that night, so I'm not gonna like, you know, dog Gleyber for that. But like
the concern trolling that we get every year on that stuff.
Right, exactly. Like, you know, but like, you know, they've been a little sloppy in the field and stuff, but like, you know, but there's, you know, and I can understand people being a little restless because they were mediocre last year and they haven't won the World Series in a little while, but like, you know, they're fine. Like, honestly, like they're fine. They're going to win the division. Boston is not better than them. neither the Rays, in my opinion. Neither are the Jays. Like the Yankees are have a much, much, much more talent than any of those teams. And you know, you'll see it's already starting to happen. Never, you know, two game losing streak aside, and you'll see it more soon.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Red Sox are playing our Mets right now, and the Mets are currently one game over 500, but that puts them in first place in the NL East, because much like the AL East, none of the other teams are over 500, which has been interesting. And both of those divisions have been called like good divisions and competitive divisions, full of teams that are good.
Right.
And so, what is your kind of early take on the Mets? Like, do you think that they're gonna be do you still see them as an NL East division winner? Do you see them as a wild card? Like, what are your early like Mets takeaways in the first like couple weeks of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I had the Braves winning these. I think they're just a little better. I think they're a little better. I think that though they don't have the absolute best depth in the major league level, they have a good enough farm system to go and like fix holes on your team. Like, for example, like Austin Riley at third, let's say he's not, you know, going to be a starter in the league long-term. Like, they can go out and trade for like, I don't know, you know, Suarez or something like that. If the Reds fall out of it, you know, like they can go fix that team if they need to. But the high level talent, the Acuñas and, you know, and whatnot, and Freddie Freeman's are just like, you know, enough to win, you know, high 90s and be a little better than New York. But the Mets are certainly, I think the Mets are good though. I mean, they similarly have not hit for a lot of power either.
Nope.
You know, I think, you know, that doesn't help that they like, you know, they played like games every other day for like the first like 2 weeks of the year.
Right.
So that's not cool. But I think they are who we thought they are as far as like their, position player talent, and that like there's a, you know, I, well, you know, let me back up. You know, again, they should be hitting better, and I think they will. You know, guys like Conforto, who's, you know, had a good game. He's had a good game so far tonight. He's, you know, it's like the seventh inning as a recording, but it's like he's got 2 for 3 of a double. You know, Jeff McNeil is not going to hit 196. You know, Jeff McNeil will never hit 196 ever.
I hope.
Like, Jeff McNeil,
yeah,
Jeff McNeil,
fingers crossed.
If Jeff McNeil hits 296, he's having a down year.
Yeah,
so like,
right.
You know, again, like they'll be okay. Lindor will be better. You know, like it's early, but defensively, like they are fitting a lot of like, you know, square pegs into their round holes, and that was like what we knew. You know, we
the
knew
Mets
that
are back,
we had
baby.
You know, the, yeah, right. Yeah, that's been messy for the last, you know, 6 years. Even when they went to the World Series, like, you know, they were like, Curtis Granderson are probably shouldn't be playing center field today. Like,
but hey, there he is.
It's working. You know, like, so they, you know, they've been doing that for a while. But I think they're going to have to figure out something with Davis and Guillorme and, you know, and who's going to start third base for them. You know, I think they'll have to, you know, I think Dom could be fine because I think he's very athletic in left field, but like, you know, but it's a learning curve, and it's still like, you know, real losses that might happen while he learns the position on the fly, you know, on the major league level. So, you know, but so those are still, you know, problems. Conforto is, you know, looks awful like in every way, you know, but like I think he's okay in right field, you know. So you know, there's that, but like, But they look good, and their bullpen actually looks better than what we thought, you know, going into the year. I should say what we thought, right? Because there's a lot of things in the Mets bullpen given all of the variance there, you know.
Yeah.
Like a guy like W. Betances, you know, who was great, you know, 4 years ago, and you know, maybe one day will be great again, but it seems like it's hurt or bad now or broken. Losing Seth Lugo, but like, you know, but the guys that they've been filling in these key roles have been solid, you know. I mean, Miguel Castro has been awesome, right?
Miguel Castro's
like,
great,
you know.
Allison's dude,
Birdland,
it's my dude, ex Oriole. Miguel Castro.
Right.
Yeah, the Mets bullpen has been good. The middle relief has been bad, but we kind of like thought that. But the high leverage relief, like the top like three guys in the bullpen, three or four guys, have been really good.
and the rotation should be a strength as well, because they have a lot of guys who can, you know, they have a lot of guys who belong in the major leagues, which is like, you know, a huge and underrated thing that they did not always do. The Mets did not always have field 25 or 26 major leaguers. Now they're actually doing that, which is just like, you know, a dramatic, you know, Cohen turn of events of getting like actual baseball men to play all, you know, to fill all the roster spots, you know. But doing that, you know, like I mean, Taiwan Walker was clearly an awesome, you know, gamble. I should say gamble because he's, you know, a veteran, but like, you know, but him, you know, gaining velocity from over the offseason, I think that's a huge win for them. So I mean, he might even be sort of like a hidden gem, you know, as someone who I thought was more of like kind of just a guy, you know, based on the last few years of his career. Now, if he's throwing 95, you know, maybe he is like a guy who deserves a playoff start now, you know, like, and that's awesome. Like, you know, and I think the Mets should expect to be in the playoffs entirely. I think, you know, again, even if I think the Braves are a little better than I expect them to make it to the wild card round and, you know, and compete for a championship, you know, right now. So, I mean, that's my Mets thought.
Hopefully they don't lose the wild card game on a home run by Connor Gillespie.
I can't do that again. Why would you bring that kind of energy in at the end
Sorry. I'm trying to delete it.
Well, actually, I was just talking about that because I was talking about Bumgarner at work. And I remember going was it May? I think it was a May game against the Giants, and it was Syndergaard against Bumgarner, and Syndergaard was awful, and it was a drizzly, rainy, cold May day, and Bumgarner just, like, mowed them down, and I was like, oh, that was kind of a preview for the wild card.
Yep. Bumgarner, who should have a no-hitter, by the way, even though I will say this for a man that a pitcher I don't particularly care for, Madison Bumgarner, but he should have a no-hitter. Just gonna get on that soapbox.
He really should. You know, it's what a weird decision from the league to not include that. But I'm pretty high in the Mets. And the other thing is too, they have reinforcements coming too, like Syndergaard's, you know, on his way back.
Carrasco, Lugo.
Carrasco's on his way back. Seth Lugo, like, they should be, you know, and I think it helps that the fact that, like, Syndergaard and Carrasco ideally are, like, guys who miss a lot of bats, you know, as with Lugo, like, even their defensive issues, you know, may not be as big a deal for them because those guys aren't going to, like, have lots of balls in play. It's the Stromans I'm going to worry about. I don't think J.D. Davis should start any Stroman game. Like, straight up, like they should just that's the Almora Guillaume there, like for Marcus's sake.
I hate to say that in Linda's presence, but I agree. I mean, like, it's we need Stroman to succeed
on JD's birthday.
We need Stroman to succeed in order for the Mets to succeed, to put him in the best position to do that. We need the best defensive infield we can put out there, at least the infield, if not all around.
Yeah, at the very least infield. Yeah, so I just I'll play the best team for the best player, you know, for the best pitcher. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, not for the best pitcher, right? But for the needs of that pitcher, you know.
Play JD when Jake starts. Thing,
you
know?
Yes, I was going to say that. Yeah. When you need offense for Jake, you play JD.
You play JD, and because literally no one puts the ball in play against Jacob DeGrom, so.
Yeah. Yeah, play me on DeGrom starts.
Yeah, seriously, I'll
play.
And I'll tag every fly ball.
Yep.
So anyway,
thanks for coming on, Bradford. We will end the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. So, Bradford William Davis, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win for this week, man. I got to see a friend today.
That's so great.
You know, yeah, me and him are fully vaccinated. It's actually people who, you know, some people may know them, but Gary Phillips, who was formerly of Yankees Magazine, but now he's freelancing a lot of places.
Did he write the DeGrom and Doc Gooden story?
Yes. Actually, fans of this podcast should check out his latest thing for Baseball Perspectives. He did an interview, a Q&A, with Doc Gooden about Jacob DeGrom. If there's, like, one person you want to hear, like, you know, the last, like, super duper great Mets pitcher, you know, being Gooden, like, with all respect to, you know, Yon Nolan, but like, yeah, that was, like, to have him kind of weigh in, you know, on DeGrom's legacy and greatness, you know, and compared to himself, like, you know, what makes him special, like, all that's in Gary's, in Q&A. And so that's on B-Pro today. So baseball perspectives. But yeah, Gary, you know, but yeah, Gary and I are cool. And so we, you know, he came out to my neighborhood. We went for, and so again, recurring theme for this podcast, went to the fields for pizza. And you know, over in Harlem. And, yeah, it was just really nice seeing a familiar friend, you know, familiar face and a friend. And we haven't, you know, I haven't done that too much, you know, over the last year. So it was nice. It was 65 degrees and sunny, and you know, wearing my shades and a hoodie, and just kind of like chilling, you know. And so I really can't complain about that. So that was a win for me.
That's beautiful. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So my walk-off win starts a little not so walk-off winny, but I guess it was a while ago because I wasn't on last week, but a couple weeks ago, we woke up in the middle of the night and our cat was super, super sick and we had to rush him to the hospital. And, you know, it turned out to be something like treatable, although not quite as easily treatable as we'd sort of understood it to be. But they also slapped us with a $4,200 bill at 2 a.m. and we just had no idea what we were going to do. Like, I'm literally crying on the phone. Like, what do we do? And we started a GoFundMe the next day, and many of y'all raised almost all of it. Like, our listeners and other people who I'm friends with and who follow me on Twitter. And it was huge. I can't even thank folks enough for being so generous and sending such sweet messages. And, you know, it was all kind of a nightmare. And, but to be able to not be worried about, like, are we going to be in credit card debt now? Like, in the middle of a pandemic and salary freezes and like, you know, and so, yeah. So thank you for not letting us like suffer in credit card debt forever. Or alternatively, something we were talking about at the time, like have to put Chibi down because we couldn't afford his treatment. And we did actually end up like moving him from a extremely fancy hospital, which nobody told us was fancy. It was just like the hospital that was listed, to a slightly cheaper hospital. But they did a wonderful job with him too. And like you said, you know, he's getting there. And he's, you know, he's back in our lives and I really appreciate it. So my walk-off win is everybody who helped make this come together, and thank you so much. And, you know, if the shoe is on the other foot, I will help you 10 times out of 10 because, you know, it means a lot. And thank y'all so much.
And fur babies are part of the family.
Yeah. Oh my God. The kids would have been so upset, and someday they will be, but at least now we had the opportunity to tell them, like, yeah, Chibi almost died, and you know, someday he will, right? He will someday, right? And that way it'll be a little smoother.
Yeah.
Smoother sailing when the real thing happens. So,
yeah. But we really do have the best community and the best listeners. I'm just always constantly blown away by your kindness and your generosity and just your support of the show and us and like our lives outside of the show. So just like, thank you guys. You guys are awesome. And good luck to Chibi and his recovery.
Yeah.
Linda, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is very similar to Bradford's, that I got to see a friend over the weekend. She was, the last time I saw her, I don't even remember. I went to her baby shower in September. She had a backyard socially distant thing. And I don't even remember the last time I saw her before that. So, you know, it was her shower. She was, you know, talking to people. So I didn't really get to spend too much time with her back in September. And then she had a baby. I had never met the baby. So I got to meet Leah finally.
Oh, is that the cutie in the picture on Facebook?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a good friend from college. Her wedding was one of the last normal things we went to. It was in December 2019. And, you know, we were hearing about this strange virus. It was in Washington at the time, but it was really no big deal and wouldn't cause problems. So, yeah, it was like, you're a mom now, Tiffany. Like, when did that happen? And I'm used to my niece and nephew. So I was like, it's been so long since I held one so little. Like, she was infant to her. She was like, oh, she's tripled in size. I was like, no, she's little. So it was just, it felt so, like, I had kind of anxiety because I hadn't seen her in so long. I was like, well, it'd be weird. Will it be different? Will we not have any things to talk about? But, you know, it was kind of like we picked up right where we left off. And even though I don't remember when that is, but, you know, it did me a lot of good finally to, you know, not normal, but it felt kind of normal, or at least approaching normal. That really did me a lot of good. So like Bradford was saying, it's just I'm not going to take that for granted anymore, like visiting a friend.
Yeah, that's really nice. I would be amiss if I didn't mention the fact that a couple of weeks ago I hugged a Pado co-host, Kellyanne Healy, for the first time in over a year.
Wow.
A couple weeks ago, I got to meet her for lunch and we hugged, and I was like, I haven't hugged anyone besides Michael or my parents in like over a year. Human contact, what's that about? So that was nice. But my walk-off win for this week is baseball related, and it's actually about former Met Matt Harvey. I'm just very happy that he's had success with the Baltimore Orioles, and it brings me great joy. I know that Bradford will. I'm in Bradford's company, and he did triumph over the Yankees in his most recent start. So it's not meant as a dig at the Yankees, but it's just a general happiness for former Met Matt Harvey. I always felt that the Mets and our fan base kind of like did him dirty a little bit in their treatment of him and his legacy. He wasn't bad at baseball because he was like selfish or whatever, you guys. He was bad at baseball because he had thoracic outlet syndrome, and that's really, you know, a career ruiner.
I mean honestly, for the future of the game, I'm hopeful that Matt Harvey can make a comeback, because like the guys with, you know, with that syndrome, like it's just like, it's a terrible, terrible track record of like, you know, being good again, you know? So Matt Harvey, like, you know, can beat the odds and regain something of what he used to have. That should be very encouraging for pitchers who go through, you know, a significant injury like that.
Exactly. And like, I hope that thoracic outlet syndrome can kind of become like a little bit more like Tommy John, where like it's obviously not good news at all and you need a surgery and you're going to miss significant time, but like you can come back from it. So I hope that Matt Harvey is the start of a trend of this thing, you know, of figuring out a medical way and, you know, a way for athletes to come back from this injury. It's been really heartwarming, to see his success with the Orioles. He's such a competitive guy, and I could always tell how much it was killing him that he didn't have what he once had. And I think part of his success has actually been accepting that he's a different pitcher now, and he can't just blow away guys anymore. He has to learn how to be a finesse pitcher. And that's what he is now. He's basically a sinker slider guy now, and he's doing well. So I'm really happy. And I hope that, I'm planning to go to the Mets Orioles game at Camden Yards in June, and I really hope one of the starts is Matt Harvey, so I can see him, because that would make me really happy. We'll see.
Harvey Day.
Yes, Harvey Day. We'll see if the baseball gods let that play out. But even if they don't, it'll still make me happy to go. But I've been following him, and you know, I watch his starts when the Mets aren't on at the same time. And I make sure I pay attention to his stat line every week, and so it's made me really happy to see his success, and I hope that continues. So that is my walk-off win for this week. Thanks for joining us, Bradford. Where can people find you on the internet?
My whole archives and daily news still, until, you know, I don't know, the internet dies, or the daily news, probably daily news first, but hopefully not, because we unionize, so hopefully we can, you know, they can advocate for better conditions for people, for the good people who do great things there. As you introduced, I am unemployed. I'm just chilling. I'm recharging. But soon I'll have some more concrete announcements on what I plan to do next. So you can find those announcements at my socials, which are currently @BEWILLY. It's a terrible, terrible handle. I'm probably going to change it. So if you search my name too, my byline, Bradford William Davis, you'll find that there too. So that's probably the easy way. It's my terrible handle, which I want to change anyway. So yeah, that's where I am posting.
Never logging off.
Never logging off. All that good stuff until I have a reason to seek income again.
Everyone should follow Bradford, and everyone should listen to Five and Dive Two with Bradford and Craig Goldstein. It's great.
Right, that's right. Every week I'm podcasting with Greg at Baseball Perspectives and Five and Dive podcast, which is part of the Baseball Perspectives podcast network. So if you search that, you will find, you know, you'll find my nasally voice discussing, you know, the league as a whole.
And you will find our friends Jeff Pagnastro and Jarrett Seidler talking about the Mets every week too. So it's a good feed. Y'all should subscribe to that. If you like this show, I think you will like the Baseball Perspectives feed as well. But you can follow Amazing Avenue as well on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram @AmazingAvenue. We have awesome content for you guys. I have the player meters for you every Monday, getting those out there. We've got game recaps, we've got morning news posts, all of that for you guys. So check out AmazingAvenue.com. You can follow this show on Twitter @APodOfTheirOwn. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am @PetitePhD. Where are you, Linda?
@LindaServage.
And you, Maggie?
@Maggie162.
Please subscribe to the entire family of podcasts at Amazing Avenue Audio. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go, Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.